If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Freeman Report. It is Thursday, the 28th of March, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman, and coming up in the first hour of today's show, I'll be discussing lawless London after that horrendous knife attack on a London train yesterday. Is it time for a fundamental rethink of policing in London? I think it is. And should we be raiding the houses of those suspected to be involved in crime and violence in the capital? I'll also be discussing how widespread Britain's cancer epidemic is and what the causes are. I wonder what they are. My guest this hour, our former Liberal Democrat MP Lembit Opic. He's also a host at TNT on the weekends. And Angus Dalgleish, who is Professor of Oncology at London's St George Hospital Medical School. We'll be discussing these two topics that are consuming the UK's collective consciousness after another knife attack yesterday and recent news that not one, not two, but three royals now have cancer. Well, that's what we're being told anyway. So two great guests to discuss these topics with. Lembit lives in London and was himself robbed recently. And Professor Angus Dalgleish is a world-leading oncologist. So sit tight for the next hour right here as I give you today's Freeman Report. Right then, let's start with that knife attack yesterday. I've watched the video of the attack, and while you cannot see most of what is going on, thank God you cannot see, it is clear that this was a serious attack. Because while the victim and most of the attacker are hidden behind a barrier on the train, you can clearly see the size of the knife in the attacker's hand as he plunges it time after time into the victim. The attack is horrendous and terrifying. You can hear passengers screaming for him to stop as he continues to stab the other man. Now, reports that I've read so far talk of a fight breaking out between the two men as they enter the train. Although I've not heard anything yet, I might have missed it, but I've not heard anything yet about what the fight was about. Was it a gangland dispute, a reprisal, or was it a random attack? Not that it matters, because the fact is that policing and order in the capital city is so out of control that these horrendous attacks are happening all of the time. And in many cases, they're taking place now in broad daylight, surrounded by members of the public. Absolutely terrifying. Now, according to figures from the London's Met Police, between 2022 and 2023, just over 13,300 recorded knife-related incidents happened in London. And nothing is clearly being done about this because this is not a new phenomenon. Between 2016 and 2020, before the lockdowns, the number of knife incidents ranged from around 12,000 in 2016 to 16,000 in 2019. And in the years between 2016 and 2019, the figures hovered around 15,000 a year. To give you some context of how prevalent knife crime is in the capital, around 10.1 people in London for every 100,000 residents were admitted to hospital after being assaulted with a knife or sharp object in 2022-2023. So I guess if we take a football stadium like London's Wembley Football Stadium, which has a capacity of 90,000, and we fill it with people, then just over 9 of those people on average will be admitted to hospital in the space of 1 year after being attacked with a knife. These are absolutely shocking statistics that should scare anybody living in London, or anybody for that matter who visits the capital. Other statistics also reveal where much of the problem lies. Young men under 25 of African Caribbean origin make up 41% of London's knife crime homicide victims in 2017. And this excludes terrorism and domestic incidents. Yet this community only make up just 1.4% of the population of London. Now, in terms of the public, currently around a quarter of Londoners' residents feel knife crime and gangs are a problem in their area. So this is widespread. This isn't condensed into one area of London. So we have a major problem in London, but what's being done about it? And what should be done to stop this disease in our cities? I'll be asking these questions to Lembe Opic in just a moment. Now, the other disease that is being inflicted upon the British people is the rising incidence of cancer in young people. The number of cases has been rising for some time, but since 2021, we're seeing cancers in young people in numbers that we wouldn't normally expect to see. I know that you have got your thoughts on what this is. If you're watching TNT, I'm sure you've got a good idea of what you think this is. I certainly do. But I'm keen to hear what Professor Angus Dogleish has to say. He's the expert. And he'll be joining me to discuss this after the news headlines with our political consultant or political editor, rather, the fabulous Basil Valentine. Now, if you want to get in touch about anything on the show, to suggest a guest or to give me some criticism, whatever you want to do, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, Basil, I'm not sure. What part of the country do you live in, Basil?
I'm down on the south coast most of the time, James.
Okay, I mean, do you spend much time in London?
Not anymore. I am a Londoner by upbringing and have lived there for most of my adult life. I don't particularly enjoy going to London these days, I must admit, and partly because, as you say, there's this epidemic of violent crime, which, it's not an epidemic of violent crime amongst people in their 50s. You know, sometimes, you know, commentators like to sort of generalize as if this knife crime business is affecting everybody. Well, it can affect everybody. In as much as anyone can be a victim, sometimes if you look at somebody the wrong way and supposedly show them a lack of respect or, a misplaced overheard word or something like that, can mean that people turn on you. But generally, you're right. It's confined to certain sectors of the community, shall we say.
Yeah, but it is I refer to it as a disease because it does spread. And of course, you know, whilst a lot of this crime is clearly gangland crime in London, innocent people do get affected as well. And, you know, we've heard many, many stories over the years of people that have been caught up in this gun violence as well, people being shot dead. So it is a real scourge. And like I said, a disease that spreads and it is a real problem. Anyway, Basil, what news headlines have you got for us today?
Well, the long election campaign has kind of started already. It starts this week. We've got the local elections in May. The by-election in Blackpool South, which may well be held on the same day, May the 2nd. And of course, then we roll through the long summer to the general election itself. Angela Rayner is expected to be one of the leading lights, if you can imagine such a thing, James, for the Labour Party in the upcoming elections. But she is finding herself beleaguered by an investigation into arrangements around the sale of her council house. She told BBC Radio 4's Today programme this morning that she is confident she had done absolutely nothing wrong as to whether or not she should have paid capital gains tax on it. She said she'd been very clear that on the advice she'd received, but when asked why she would not put that legal advice in the public domain, she said, because that's my personal tax advice, but I'm happy to comply with the necessary authorities that want to see that. Now, she's been backed up by Keir Starmer, but apparently this matter is or will be the subject of a police investigation. Sometimes these things go away. Sometimes people are shown to have shown such impropriety that they have to resign. They're putting Rayner out front, criticising the Conservative government for its failure to level up, which Rayner has described as a sham and a scam.
Basil, because I do know a little bit about capital gains tax, was she living in, presumably she wasn't living in the property, no?
Well, I think that's the inference, yes. Greater Manchester Police has confirmed it is reassessing its initial decision not to investigate allegations made about her living arrangements after receiving a complaint. So basically, somebody has said to her, she hasn't, you know, my guess is, I don't want to get the station into trouble by making claims or something here about a legal matter. That would, you know, it would appear to be the case that this wants further examination. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that we've heard of MPs, would it, doing dodgy stuff with houses and allowances. Can I just ask why the police are involved, though? Because normally this would be a matter for HMRC. You know, you get a hefty fine or something like that if you are caught fiddling things. How come the police are involved?
Well, that's a very good question. Miss Rayner has said that she paid bills and council tax and was registered to vote at the home she brought through the famous Right to Buy Thatcher scheme. If it was her primary address, as she has claimed, she would not have to pay capital gains on it when she sold it in 2015 for £127,500, making a £48,500 profit. However, there have been claims that despite registering at Vicarage Road, she was primarily living at Lowndes Lane, her husband's address. Greater Manchester Police looked into the claims and initially said there was no evidence of an offence being committed. However, James Daly, the Tory MP for Bury North, who filed the complaint about Ms. Rayner, followed up with the force and said they had failed to properly investigate the allegations, prompting them to reassess their initial decisions. Whatever you say, James, it's a very bad look for somebody who is sort of touted as being this working class hero, one of the sort of very few supposedly genuinely working class people on Labour's front bench. Her story is a triumph over adversity, apparently, you know, rising to the dizzy heights of deputy leader of the Labour Party when coming from a very humble background. So if she is forced to step back from frontline politics as a result of this, it will be a major blow to the Labour Party.
Yeah, and of course, you know, she was famously... got a lot of criticism, didn't she, for our expenses? Because, of course, all the expenses are published now from MPs. I think I recall it being about some headphones or something for iPad, or maybe it was an iPad or something. But basically, she was spending, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pounds on, you know, accessories, which you kind of have to wonder if you actually need to do your job as an MP. She was putting all of this on her expenses. So
that's been largely memory hold. I mean, I remember that whole expenses scandal. It was absolutely obscene, frankly. They all covered their own backsides and we don't hear very much about it anymore. There should have been mass resignations. It's why, another reason why people are so dissatisfied with the political class in general. I mentioned the upcoming by-election in Blackpool South, where Scott Benton is being forced to resign as a result of a lobbying scandal. Scott Benton is a dirty, rotten scoundrel, says Dale Dodwell, the manager of the tattoo parlour Monsters, Inc. in Blackpool. Dodwell's words symbolise the feeling that many local people have given up on politics.
Yeah, especially because all these MPs, they'd be getting inflation busting pay rises. I know they don't give themselves pay rises. There's a whole separate board. But still, you know, the it doesn't look good in the public's eyes when they're getting these huge pay rises and then they're still, you know, got their hustles on the side, which are clearly against the rules and in some cases totally illegal. Basil, exactly. I'm going to move on because, sorry, go on.
Well, just very quickly, this whole levelling up business was a bit of a catchphrase, wasn't it? It's supposed to mean improving living standards and infrastructure in the north of England to match those in the south. But really, it has amounted to nothing at all. Very quickly, yeah. Ian Graham, a postal worker born in Blackpool, said politicians such as Benton promoted levelling up to be voted in. But Graham says he has not seen anything at all come to fruition.
Yeah. Like everything else with the government over the past, well, not just the, this government, but particularly this government over the past 4 years, it's all hot air. And all that hot air has just literally risen and disappeared because they've actually done nothing. Basil, thank you so much. I'll talk to you again in just under an hour's time when you come back with some new headlines from the UK. Right, okay. It. Got a brilliant show lined up for the rest of you today. First up, I'm going to be joined by Lembit Opic. We're going to be talking about Lawless London. And then following Lembit at the bottom of this hour, so in about 10 minutes' time, I'll be speaking with Angus Dalgleish about Britain's cancer epidemic. So definitely tune in and stay right where you are right now. Don't move and stick with us right here on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are you ready to help your family get prepared for the unexpected?
Here we go!
Ladybug and Cat Noir know how important it is to be ready, because you never know when Hawk Moth is going to strike or a disaster will hit. And you don't need miraculous powers. Just put those planning skills you already have to good use. Make a plan that will help you and your family be ready when emergencies happen. Ready Kids can help. Get started at ready.gov/kids.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay. Well, I'm delighted to be joined now by former Lib Dem MP and TNT's very own weekend host, Lembit Opic. Hello, Lembit.
Great to see you again. How are you doing, James?
Yeah, I'm doing good. We're getting near summer, which is my favourite time of year, so it makes me smile. Now, Lembit, we're going to talk about knife crime in a second, but in the break there, you were telling me that you've got some news to share with us.
Yeah, it's very fitting, actually. I have been coming to central London. Really, I was going to find out what people's views about knife crime were, but in Purley, which is a station to the south of London, we were stopped and the train got filmed by armed police officers, people with machine guns and guns, because there was an incident on my very train. We're talking about Lawless London. It delayed us by an hour and everyone was scared. So if life follows discussion, that's what happened today. I was on a train with 15 armed guards. They cleared the train and they were clearly searching for somebody. That's the state of London at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely shocking, isn't it? I'm assuming, Lembit, you've seen the video from yesterday of the attack on the train. I mean, you live in London. You were actually robbed recently, weren't you? Do you feel safe in London now? Well, I mean, clearly not, but to describe what it feels like.
I'm sitting here now in central London in a coffee shop just south of Paddington Station. And as you can see, people are coming and going. But to be honest with you, I wouldn't live in central London again. I don't like coming in here. I don't bring anything valuable in, apart from the fact I have to bring a computer and my phone in. As you said, twice I've been robbed within 1.5 kilometers of Westminster, the mother of Parliament, the defender of our freedoms and safety. And on one occasion, it was just outside Charing Cross Police Station, and four armed robbers took my phone from my hand on bicycles. I would have tried to engage with them, but they were gone too fast, and probably just as well, James, because they would have stabbed me.
Yeah.
And then the second time, it was even worse. I was sitting in a coffee shop, not unlike this one, and somebody came in, grabbed my phone from in front of my very eyes and ran out. Now, I'd noticed a gang coming in earlier, so I had to pack everything up. And by the time I packed everything up, my phone had gone. That was twice in 6 months. Well, actually, twice in 4 months. And today, as I say, I saw with my own eyes 15 armed police emptying a train, banging on the toilets, and making the 100 people on that train tear out. This place is no longer fitting for families, and it's not really safe for anybody who isn't situationally aware. I thought of myself as quite savvy, James, but in actual fact, there are some things you can't prepare for. And when four people have knives, you have to give them your phone or risk the consequences.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would encourage anybody, if you do get stopped by somebody, in most instances, it's best just to give your stuff, isn't it? It's not even worth, your phone is not worth losing your life, and whatever money you've got in your wallet, just give it to them. But Sadiq Khan is obviously the mayor of London. This has been going on for a long time now. I did give some statistics in my introduction, but it's clear that the knife crime in particular, it's been running between sort of 12,000 and 16,000 incidents a year. Lembik, I also talked about the fact that if you filled Wembley football stadium with 90,000 people, that 9 people in that stadium every year will be admitted to hospital on average for a knife crime incident. That's pretty shocking. And like I said, the fact that these figures have been high for so long suggests that whatever Sadiq Khan is doing, I mean, is he doing anything? It's certainly not working. You're a former MP. What do you think should happen? What should the police be doing, and what should the mayor be doing to stop this happening?
Well, on the first point, I think Sadiq Khan, the Labour mayor, has got a catastrophic record in terms of law and order and safety. The people in this cafeteria right in central London, they don't share an optimism that the place is safe. The kind of comments I've been having, I never use my phone, or an interesting one, I keep an old phone, which I'll hand over, which doesn't work anymore, because by the time they realize that it's gone. So people are basically planning to be robbed. They're planning coping strategies in case they're robbed. And on the second point, what should be done? Well, the police have a dreadful reputation in London. You'll know, and your viewers will know potentially, that more than one police officer has been found guilty of very serious crimes, including murder. And so there's a broken relationship between the Metropolitan Authority, the Metropolitan Police, and that. So the police actually need to sort out their own criminal activity before they can stop other people's. The second thing, and it ties into that, is Sadiq Khan needs to start taking responsibility. He is the man in charge of the Met, but he blames the Met. Yeah. It's like saying, there's something wrong, and it's your fault, even though I'm in charge. He doesn't take any responsibility. He thinks he's going to get re-elected because the Conservatives have chosen a very weak candidate. But that's made him totally, totally banal when it comes to this. Of course, he's not in danger. He's got an armed guard. He ironically drives around in a car, telling everybody else to cycle. But if I was the mayor, I would establish a relationship with the police where I stop blaming them and start working with them. Secondly, I'd work with groups like Oasis, which is a very progressive church-based, I have to say, movement right in the centre of London, which has been tremendously successful in running a school and reducing the crime with those people in the demographic that would tend to be more likely to suffer knife crime. So you work with them, groups like that, but Khan doesn't really do much of any of that. He just goes around telling us what's wrong with other politicians.
Yeah, and we know where these, where a lot of these crimes are coming from. There's one statistic which I think, you know, and I'm sure that I don't want to pick on one sort of community, but it's pretty a shocking statistic. So I will highlight it. Over 40% of the victims of knife crime are from the African Caribbean community, which represent, get this, 1.4% of the London population. So that is shocking. I mean, that's, you know, the ratios there in terms of the number of people involved versus the actual size of the population should tell us a lot. And I'm sure that there's lots of other groups as well. And, you know, I'm not necessarily picking just on that one, but I haven't got the figures for the others. But, you know, what are the police doing? Surely they should be raiding the houses of suspected criminals to try and find these guns, these knives, these drugs. They shouldn't just be sitting and waiting, surely.
Well, citing those ratios will incite you for racism, because they're terrified of this woke agenda when you're not allowed to say this, even though the statistics are there in black and white, making it obvious that this is the main group of perpetrators and victims. And other people suffer as well. I have to say that my phone was stolen by an Afro-Caribbean group. I'm pretty sure of that. But you're not allowed to say that, because apparently you're not allowed to comment about the ethnicity of people. Unless, of course, you're Sadiq Khan, when Sadiq Khan's allowed to say that white males don't represent the people of London, which is clearly a racist comment by his own measure. What should they do? You're right. The police should actually park the wokeism and start engaging in law enforcement. The people in this cafeteria aren't much interested in the woke agenda. They're interested in not getting stabbed or robbed. And it's the robbery that, in my non-scientific example here, and it's a restaurant courtroom, actually, in my non-scientific example, that bothers them the most. How do they do that? They reach out. They actually say, we're going to work with your community, but we're not going to forgive your community just because you have an ethnic bias in the statistics. But the problem here, James, is we're so far down the work path that the conversation we're having now would never really sit in the state-sponsored British media, because they'd be too terrified of being accused of racism. And actually, if we're serious about this, we have to call this out for what it is. And the irony, of course, is this wokeism is killing the very people that we're not allowed to talk about.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing here, isn't it? I was actually, that figure there was about the victims. But I think the implication is this is gangland, sort of affairs going on between within the African Caribbean community. Mm. Lembit, thank you so much for joining me. All I can say is I hope that the fact that these these crimes now are being so widely publicised. I mean, that video yesterday was absolutely shocking. Yeah. My only hope is that London wake up and they vote him out of office this year. Thank you very much.
That's the only solution. Good to see you.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now for the news headlines. And when I come back, we're going to have Professor Angus Dogleish, who's going to talk about that other disease being inflicted on the British population, which is the cancer incidence rates, which are rising among young people. So stay put right here on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
I've got news for you, baby. I've got news for you, baby.
News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A hailstorm has wiped out a solar farm in Texas, highlighting the perils of swapping traditional power sources for vulnerable green alternatives. Police are investigating the motive behind a mass stabbing in the United States. And there's outrage in Australia after it was revealed a women's soccer team who dominated an all-women's tournament in Sydney, winning every game they played, only did so because they had five biological males on their side.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. As I said, from one British disease, lawless London, to another, which is, of course, I'm talking about cancer rates and the rising incidence of cancer, particularly among young people, which I think is very, very concerning at the moment. You know, and I think this is in the public consciousness now, because not one, not two, but three royals have been diagnosed with cancer now, or so we're told. So to discuss all of this, I'm delighted that Professor Angus Dalgleish is coming back on the Freeman Report. Hello, Angus. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Angus, let's just dive straight in. How prevalent are cancer rates at the moment? And I guess the important question is, you know, how much have they been increasing and when did this increase start?
Well, it's a very good question because they have been increasing for some time, particularly amongst the younger people and particularly with regards bowel cancer. This has been going up the last few years, and I've known people who, friends of mine, have contacted me, and it's not about them, it's about their adult children who've got bowel cancer. I mean, I've had two, three of these. And so this has been going on for some time. And what is the cause? I mean, they have to say the only major thing that's changed is probably diet and food. So there's a lot of speculation. Is it due to something that processed food, some chemicals in it, etc.? But there's no doubt that there's been a big change in the last 2 years, where this slow increase that was coming up has started to take off. And the last two or three years, they've really increased quite dramatically around the world. I mean, in America, they were reporting up to a 40% increase in some places over what they expected. But it is, I mean, overall, I mean, you see everything from 2 to 4% to, depending on the populations, to up to 20% of increase in cancers in young people. The one thing you can be sure, whatever the percentage is, this is real. This is continuing to become a problem, and it's not going away anytime soon. And then it's an obvious thing to say, because it's accelerated in the last 2 years, is there something else that is stimulating this? And that's the question we have to ask. When people talk about the causes of cancer, I think that's quite simplistic. From my point of view, that you have an initiator of cancer, and then that can just lie there, quite well controlled by the immune system. And then you get a promoter of cancer. So that's some other irritation which allows this thing to be either escape immune control or to fuel it, to add fuel in it so the cancer takes off. And this would be why you have genetic issues with cancer and they don't hit you till you're 40 or 50, because it's this change, this promoter. But I really do think it's beholden that we're asking around the world, everyone, to say, let's have an official investigation into what is going on with this sudden increase in cancers amongst young people, particularly in the last 2 years. And when you look at it, there's plenty of people out there who've clearly said this correlates with the rollout of a COVID vaccination, and it's particularly in people of this age group. And I went public with saying my concerns that the booster vaccine was causing marked immune perturbation, allowing the escape of previously well-controlled melanomas. Well, since I flagged that up well over a year and a bit ago, people have been saying that we're seeing exactly the same. And it's not just melanoma, it's leukemias, lymphomas, renal cell cancer, and all abdominal cancers.
Yeah, now the British government, I know that in regards of heart attacks is another thing that is concerning. You know, when you look at the statistics, heart attacks in young people, strokes. The British government, I think initially, didn't they? They started to talk about the fact, well, you know, we had lockdowns, you know, the ambulances were under a stretch, so people weren't getting to hospital on time. People miss their doctor's appointments, so they weren't getting diagnosed. Is that a credible argument here? I just want to kind of explore some of the things the government has been talking about in terms of why we're seeing these increased number. Could it be down to underdiagnosis?
Initially, yes, the lockdown. I mean, I went very vocal when they brought the lockdown and said, do not do it, because for a respiratory disease, it's well known. If you do any research at all, it makes no difference. But what does make a difference, if you change the National Health Service to the National COVID Service, you're not going to be doing the screening. And this happened to a friend of mine. He had three screens for his condition cancelled, and he presented with the cancer that it was meant to prevent. I mean, so this is, there's millions of people worldwide have had this delay because of the lockdown. But what is going on now, it is kind of accelerating. We would have expected the incidents to start to settle down, but no, there's no evidence of that. And, you know, I've supported very strongly Andrew Brigden and bringing this to the government, saying, you know, we must have a proper investigation in it. Coming up with lame excuses, the stupid excuse ever, was from Chris Whitty, who's meant to be a chief medical officer, who suggested that all the heart attacks and everything was due to the fact that people didn't get their statins due to commenced statins for lockdown. Well, I mean, that is unbelievable factual statement, because the you don't get statins usually until you're nearly 60 on the NHS. And we were talking then about the what you just mentioned, the number of young people dropping down with heart attacks, clots of various descriptions, strokes, etc. There's no way. I mean, that was an unbelievable answer to that question. There's no way they would have ever been offered them. So that was not the answer. And we do know now that it was the vaccine program that's clearly associated with this. You can't hide it. That's why AstraZeneca was pulled. I believe all the others should have been pulled too. But, I mean, as I pointed out, AstraZeneca are actually quite honourable. They did the vaccine for sort of cost plus, and they had an open book with regards to the side effects, which is why it became evident and they pulled it. The others were doing it for the shareholders, and they tried to hide all their side effects. So this is why we're in the mess we're in.
Yeah, now it is worrying, isn't it, that we've got a chief medical officer that he came out with that, didn't he, about the statins. And then, of course, Carl Hennigan and I think Jefferson at Oxford University. No, it was Carl Hennigan by himself, actually, on this one. He did some analysis of the statins numbers and he totally threw out that suggestion, absolutely disproved it. It's worrying, therefore, that we've got a chief medical officer that is just coming out with stuff that is not backed by anything. Do you think that the government know full well what is going on, and essentially they just don't want to admit it because they know how angry the public will be?
Well, I really cannot fathom it out, because it's inevitable that truth will come out. And by delaying it, you make everything worse. I mean, there's a massive loss of trust in the entire government, particularly when Andrew tried to debate it and the Prime Minister just shut him down and said everyone knows they're safe and effective when he mentioned about the vaccines. Well, everybody knows that that is not the case. Everybody knows somebody who's had some form of vaccine damage. I know several, nothing to do with professional capacity. So that's clearly ridiculous. So the longer they go on, the bigger the anger is going on in the community. And it's already surfacing because people don't believe the government, or certainly the chief medical officer or SAGE or any chief science officer, don't believe anything they say now. They realise that they've been lied again and again and again over all this. And what's happening, and I warned them at the time, unless you come to clean and you do the vaccine programme properly, which means pulling it when the side effects go up to the point where it's worse problem than the disease you're trying to prevent, they're going to not believe anything. And you're going to have people say, well, all vaccines are bad. So they're not going to have their measles and mumps and all these other things. And again, that prediction's come true.
It has come true, hasn't it? Angus, we're going to take a quick break now, but don't go anywhere, because I've got loads more questions for you. I guess my first question when we come back off the break is, what do you make now of the fact that Boots, the chemist retailer, high street retailer in the UK, are actually going to be selling COVID shots to anybody over the age of 12? I'd like to hear your view on that right after this break on TNT.
Anticipate potential delays for the morning commute. In other news, a recent government report on prescription drug pricing points to corporate mouth.
Freedom of the press is about your right to know.
What are you talking about, man? Look at his stats.
It's about your right to be informed. Your right to access all types of information keeps us free as a nation.
No.
Today, there are real threats to press freedom.
Residential areas by...
And your right to know about the world around us.
Look.
Some threats are obvious, some are easy to miss, but they all put our way of life at risk. We must defend against all of these threats, no matter what kind of news is important to you.
Justified putting American troops in harm's way?
That's a great question.
We must protect our right to know before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, Angus, we've heard news this week that, of course, you know, the scientific advisors have told the government that everybody under 50 shouldn't be getting the vaccine, the COVID vaccine anymore, unless they're in a specific group. But of now, we've got the news that Boots, the chemist, as high street retailer, is going to sell the shots to anybody who wants one over the age of 12. I'd just like to get your opinion, what you think about that.
Well, in a word, I think it's appalling. And to put a bit more icing on it, as it were, that Dr. Rosalind Jones, who's a retired senior paediatrician who's very much into childhood vaccines and one of the major councils, and I have just written to the chairman and the CEO of Boots today, and it's a public letter, and it's been copied into Dr. Whitty and the various others who ought to know better, and it will be published in full in the Conservative Woman site. So that's my reaction. It is unbelievable that you would allow someone to purchase a vaccine, which is now the list of side effects to it is just beyond belief. Anybody could not pull it, lock, stock and barrel. Particularly messenger RNA vaccines, they should never be given to anybody who isn't terminal with cancer over 70. And I always like to remind people that when the vaccine program was pushed through, it was pushed through for people at great risk over 70. It was never in their wildest dreams, apart from the pharmaceutical companies, to actually bring it right down and start giving it to children, something which has got temporary authorization. This has not been approved, the vaccine. That's the other thing that has gone to the side here. And so I just think it's absolutely dreadful. And I think it actually is gross medical negligence to even offer a vaccine that doesn't work. We now know this vaccine does not work. If you have a booster, you're 3.5 times more likely to go down with COVID than if you don't have the booster. That was the Cleveland Clinic, an enormous figure organization. It's nearly as big as the NHS in America. And it's subsequently been confirmed by others. And I've confirmed it with my own eyes because I just amazed the number of people who went rushing off for their boosters and came back with COVID. Whereas those of us wouldn't go anywhere near them, you know, never got COVID. So I think that's my take on that. It's appalling, it should be withdrawn. And I think all messenger RNA vaccines should be destroyed and never rescued again, because they've been developed for 20 years for cancer and they never got through the approval process then. So why would you do it for kids now?
Yeah, something's definitely gone wrong, hasn't it? Because I did read the story about this announcement on Boots. And basically, I forget the name of the government advisor, but anyway, the government message was that although young, healthy people are at extremely low risk from COVID, they might want to get this vaccine and walk into Boots and purchase it to stave off an uncomfortable sore throat and coughs. Now, Angus, you will know, and most people listening to this will know, that every medication you take, there's a trade-off between the side effects, which most medicines, there will be side effects, and of course, you know, the actual symptoms you have and how serious they are. Something's gone wrong, hasn't it, when we're giving something with serious side effects for people, and the government saying maybe people want to take it for a sore throat and some coughs. What do you think has gone wrong, Angus? How we ended up in this situation?
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, I've examined this in great detail, and I'll take the opportunity just to mention that the result is a book we call The Death of Science. There's been total death of any science, any debate, any discussion. And it appears to me that there's been a takeover. I mean, the government, I cannot believe they've been so stupid about so many things. They've been taken over by the big pharma seems to have directed this whole thing. In my day, when I was a young consultant, everything was openly debated, and you wouldn't want to go and push something that might be have a bad side effect. I mean, I'll just take back to the 70s when there was a terrible flu outbreak in America. It was killing young people in their 20s and 30s. And that is a time you want to do something. They rolled out a vaccine for that. They gave it to about 42 million people before the FDA listened to some physicians who said, we've seen the rate of Guillain-Barre, which is an ascending paralysis, which comes up and leaves people very, very ill indeed, go up. And we think it's due to the vaccine. So they sent people in. They did it very, very carefully. And they said, oh, it has. And then they turned around and said, well, no one's dying anymore. So they pulled it. Now, we should have done that with the vaccines 2 years ago, in my thing. So why didn't? Because they've been taken over. They were Stockholm syndrome, I called it. I mean, they were taken over and they did what they were told, I would say, by the shareholders of the companies, not by proper medical authorities who are also hijacked.
But it's odd, isn't it? Because there's so many things that we're told we shouldn't have that are taken off. You know, you've got to get a prescription for so many medicines, which actually, you know, the side effects are fairly mild compared to the side effects of this. So how come? I just think that something, you know, with all the data we've got, Angus, now showing how dangerous these can be, something terrible has gone wrong, I think, in this country. And I think this is the evidence showing that it's happened. Now, a related topic to this, Angus, is obviously the WHO pandemic accord, because this is being debated. It has been debated over the past couple of years, and it's being debated pretty much in secret. They're trying their best not to let people know around the world what is actually going on. But the consequences of this being pushed through and waved through by our governments, along with amendments to the international health regulations, the consequences of that could be that the WHO gets legal powers to mandate certain medicines, to mandate lockdowns on countries that are members, which is pretty much every country in the world. I think it's 192 members of the WHO. How concerned are you about this?
I am extremely concerned. I think that this is one of the worst developments to ever come out of the pandemic. The WHO is an extremely useless, incompetent organisation that should now be totally disbanded. And I say that on the grounds of the evidence. If the WHO had been remotely competent, that virus would never have left China. Who is the head of the WHO? He's the first non-medic in charge of WHO. Previous, always been very, very senior doctors, very experienced. Who put him there? China. Why did China really push for him to become head of all this? Because they were really upset when SARS-1 escaped. I say the word escape there, that pandemic was. And they were really, the WHO were competent then. They were told, you must do this, that, and the other. You shouldn't do this, that, and the other. And rather than take a lesson, they thought, well, we'll get our way back and we'll take over the WHO. It is a totalitarian force that's doing everything it can in order to get that power. I have been through the transcript they want people to sign, and as Churchill would say, it defends itself by being read closely by its sheer length. And the topic and the conclusions bear no, like a lot of scientific papers these days and a lot of government analysis, the conclusions and the headlines bear no relationship to what's underneath, which you have to read very carefully. I believe that if people do sign up for this, it is a loss of sovereignty, and the senior lawyers have pointed this out. But I wouldn't believe all this except for this madness that we've all been through. I think once we're signed up, you can guarantee that the next pandemic's inevitable. It will be released.
Yeah.
I mean, I was the first to point out that this virus escaped from the lab. There's no way it was an actual virus because it had too many inserts in, some of which had been previously published from the Wuhan lab using technology that virtually nobody else had from America. And that's Ralph Barrick's names on all those papers. There's 600 of these type of laboratories sitting in the Wuhan lab. I honestly believe they will create the pandemic. In fact, I'll go further, and that is say that apart from since the Spanish flu, I have serious doubt whether any of the so-called pandemics were truly natural. Even colleagues said, I'm not stating this as fact, I'm stating it as a speculation because there's a pattern. Even Ebola, was it really natural, or was it encouraged with all the laboratories and the research that's going on? And with regards to the gain of function research that has been going on, and it's been promoted by Fauci, who I think is the arch villain of all this, because he told they weren't going to do it anymore. And basically, they contract. That's how Wuhan got all this expertise, because they exported it. Now, that lab and everything they're doing and people that are doing all this work under the guise of normal virology to protect you from the next pandemic, to make sure we can get a vaccine, I believe that is what the plan is to roll out vaccine after vaccine. Now, they don't work. I thought they must know something I didn't at the beginning, and I thought, well, they must work. It's quite concerning. But then it was a very short period of time. It was clear that they didn't prevent transmission, and they didn't prevent the disease either, I believe, because it was dying out just when they brought the vaccine program out. Well, they want to do it so they can do it faster next time, when you won't have a chance to realise they're not going to work.
I mean, if you make something so profitable and also something which gives those that are powerful more power over the rest of us, then it's inevitable, isn't it, that these things are going to happen more frequently. Now, Angus, the first time around, early on in the pandemic, clearly the majority of the scientific community was duped, I think. You know, there were those of us who knew from the start something wasn't right. But a lot of people still are. They still do follow the line that this is all safe and effective and there was a real pandemic. What are people saying now, though, within your community? Do you think now we've got all this data, we've got all this evidence, that more people in the scientific community are suddenly opening their eyes and thinking, geez, I got that totally wrong and we need to do something? Are we seeing that?
I would like to think so. It is a matter of, that's all history, you know, move on, going forward, all these terrible expressions that they use. And I just think that a lot of them are extremely embarrassed and they're still trying to defend and say, well, at the time, nobody could be sure, nobody could have seen. Well, that wasn't true because, you know, one of the things I found out, I shouted alone, I thought, in the wilderness about a lot of these things. And I was brushed off as an eccentric, a maverick, and the whole things, and the only one. Well, like the sub-postmasters, I find there's an awful lot of us out there who were told we were the only one. So they cannot hide behind that. Real experts told them that, that it would never go through to the lockdown. I mean, that was an unbelievable bully, that you didn't need to wait for the vaccine program. A whole load of things rolled out, like just anti-inflammatories, nasal sprays that, you know, with interferon, et cetera, and vitamin D. All those things would have solved the problem. And we mentioned earlier on talking about the ventilators. I mean, that was unbelievable. The ventilators. Waiting for everybody to get ill to go into hospital. And then, I mean, basically they were murdered with the ventilators because they didn't understand that these people were producing an inflammatory response in their lung to the COVID, which is like cystic fibrosis. They had to get it out, not force it back in. And it took them quite a while before they realised that. And of course, how many did we order? We were converting aircraft factories to make ventilators, which were not needed, along with hospitals, Nightingale hospitals, which never had patients. I mean, the whole thing was a disaster.
Yeah, it was a disaster. Sadly, we haven't got enough time to talk about that. We've got about a minute left, Angus. But that letter, tell people where is it going to be published? Where can we find that letter?
It's on the Conservative Woman website. It's a great title because it's neither conservative nor about women, and it means you can publish.
Fantastic. And Angus, yeah. I'm really keen. You did hold up your book earlier, but I'm really keen that we get a good view of that. And tell people in about 30 seconds what the book is about.
The book is about the death of science with regards to the origin of the virus, the lockdown, all the things that we were told we shouldn't do, we shouldn't take, we shouldn't make, etc. And there's some wonderful contributions in here, especially about the vaccines and how the truth about the vaccines came out. It's multi-authored. All I've done is I started writing the first three chapters, and then we decided to have multi-authors and edit it. So it's with Professor Goddard and myself who are the editors.
Fantastic. Angus, if I buy it, I'm going to go and buy a copy today. If I send it to you, will you sign it for me?
Of course.
Fantastic. Angus Dalgleish, Professor Angus Dalgleish, ladies and gentlemen. Angus, you'll have to come back on at some point. Good luck with that letter. I hope it has the effect that you want to. Angus Dalgleish, everyone. Right, I'll be back in just a second right here on TNT.